Welcome to Bookish Podcast with Kath and Al, a podcast about books-ish. A quick disclaimer before we start, there may be some spoilers, so please save the episode for later if you don't want any. And also, please follow us on social at We Are Bookish Pod. We hope you enjoy.
I wasn't even looking, I wasn't even paying attention. Then you just started laughing and I was like, what's going on?
Hey, girl, hey.
Hey.
Oh, it's because I was like, I couldn't count.
You know, we really should start recording. I said at work today, I was like, yeah, I don't think we should do a podcast audio only. I think we need to record the video as well. And I was like, we should probably do that too.
We should. We actually should.
Yeah.
Do that.
But
more often.
I always look sweaty and horrible. It's like the end of the day and like, yeah.
You're like post-workout, aren't you?
Yeah.
Normally.
Yeah. 10 minutes. I've been good. I was so good. I was meant to go to Frame. I'm in my Frame era, by the way, guys. So I was meant to go to Frame, the gym. It's called like, is it called Move Your Frame or is that just their thing? I don't know.
Is that their tag or their strength?
Yeah. I was meant to go at lunch and then I couldn't sleep last night. So I cancelled it like midnight. Dead on the 12-hour cutoff.
Oh, and God.
Then, yeah. And then I didn't go. So I was like, I better do something. And then here I am, sweaty, gross, after my workout. But there we go.
That makes me lol that, you know, when you're like, shit, I need to cancel the class and it's almost 12 hours or 6 hours. There's a guy at my F45 who makes me laugh so much. So our cut-off time at our F45 is 6 hours before. And he's just like, oh, no, I never worry about that. If it comes to it and it's too late, I just like to think I've given myself a £20 lay-in. I'm like...
Oh, my God.
I'm like, no.
Wait, 20 That's, quid?
It's 20. If you cancel, so late cancel. So you get up to 6 hours free, up to, like, half an hour, it's a £10 late cancel fee.
Right.
Which is painful. But if you cancel, like, within that last half an hour, it's 20 quid.
I think for me, I've got, like, I bought a pack of classes, so I just lose one, which is peak. But I couldn't sleep, and I gave myself till midnight, and I was like, if I'm still awake at midnight, I'm going to cancel that class.
And here I was at midnight.
Yeah, I know, ridiculous, but anyway... Me and sleep.
Yeah, it is wild though. Like, I understand why they need to do it, but also, like, Christ, it's expensive. It's expensive to cancel late.
Yeah. I mean, I get why they do it because otherwise you could just not turn up and then, yeah. But, anywho. What are we talking about today?
Oh my God, I want to tell you about things I've watched recently. And no, it's not the Barbie movie. I would have watched it, hopefully, by the time the episode comes out in September. And don't get me wrong, I'm an ardent Barbie fan, but I did see Oppenheimer first, which was always the plan. I was going to do Oppenheimer and Barbie's a double billing, but I only ended up doing Oppenheimer one Friday night. It was very long. Very long, but very good.
3 hours, isn't it?
It's 3 hours and 9 seconds or something ridiculous like that.
Nuts.
It was like, it was good, man. You know what? If anyone's a like big Christopher Nolan fan, like you will not be disappointed by just how fantastic. Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. There's some parts that I had maybe some question marks over. I think it's like they speak about it or Cillian Murphy speaks about the sex scene with him and Florence Pugh. That's in there. And when I first saw it, I was like, I wonder how they filmed this, because it's quite like, probably not like, oh, well, I'm not going to spoil it for you, because just in case you go see it with Tom or anything. But I wondered how they filmed that, given the setup of the scenario in the room. And then I thought, oh, that's quite uncomfortable. But then I was like, they would never have filmed it with that much exposure. And then there's this sort of question online as to whether actually that was necessary or not. And then whose point of view or perspective are we looking at? Are we looking at it from the perspective of Emily Blunt here? Is it a little bit of like Cillian Murphy's character, like Oppenheimer and him feeling naked in that situation? Is it Emily Blunt feeling naked in that situation? Is it a bit of both? Like, it was interesting. But it did make me feel ooey about it, but only because of, like, I started wondering how it was filmed. But obviously Florence Pugh is like, I am woman, hear me roar. So I don't think she would have done anything that would have made her feel uncomfortable, you know?
Yeah.
But also, like, it's not, no plot, no spoilers here. Like, it's histories. If you want to, like, the history is known yeah, about, exactly. Like, the movie. It centres on the two, I guess, kangaroo courts that was put up against, like, J. Robert Oppenheim, who is, like, the father of the atomic bomb. And it centres around, like, the Manhattan Project, and that all came together. And it's from that, like, perspective of, like, what happened in Los Alamos. So, and then I guess you watch, like, his trial, because he gets put in front, like, of a kangaroo court as such, and whether he's, like, a communist, because it's, like, in the McCarthy era when that all happens, and he gets his licence revoked, his security clearance revoked. And then the second sort of, like, court that we see is it Levi Strauss. They have this whole moment where they correct his name, but it's Robert Downey Jr.'s character, and he's going for a place in the Senate, and it's his relationship with Oppenheimer. So it was really interesting, and there's so many big names in this movie, and, like, It was just very good. I think it was very well done. And yeah, go watch it.
Yeah, I want to go and watch it. I'm scared to go to the cinema for a 3-hour movie, I'm not going to lie, but I think I will, hopefully.
My friend told me about an app where apparently it tells you when a good time is to pee. And then whilst you're there, it'll fill you in with what you've missed. So then you don't feel like you've missed anything. So it's, like, the most convenient point to wee without missing any context of the film. How good is that?
Oh, my God, that's genius. I need that. I really need that because, like, honestly, I will need a wee in 3 hours. Like, there's no doubt. I'd either need a wee or I'd be severely dehydrated, one of the two. So
exactly. Exactly. And then she told me at the point, it was for Oppenheimer, it was something to do with his brother. And I was like, to be fair, yeah. At any point with his brother would have been fine. All you needed to know about his brother was that his brother was a communist, and therefore, like, that sort of, like, he's tarred with the same brush because of that.
Fair.
But so that's all you needed to know. But other than the only point really is when he introduces him to Florence Pugh's character. But then after that, whatever.
Okay, cool. I'm going to go watch it. Yeah, I want to watch it. I mean,
good.
Apparently it's, like, really good in the cinema, so I do want to go. I just need to muster the courage. I'm also really busy for the whole of August, like, every single weekend, which is just a bit stressful, actually, in its own right, so.
I agree. It's funny, I took a week off because I'm away next weekend, and then I've got Hen the weekend after, and then it's, like, the long weekend here in the UK. And I took a week off and I had 2 days free, and now they've gone. So I'm like, oh, God, I'm not even going to... I need a day to myself.
Yeah. I'm a bit stressed, I'm not going to lie. No, it's going to be good. It's going to be good. But, yeah. Yeah, summer. Summer is summering, but it's not summering weather-wise.
No, it's really grey.
But I'm actually not going to wish for anything different, to be honest, because I don't really want it to be like when we go to All Points East, I don't want it to be like 38 degrees because I will die. So
I don't see that happening.
No, I don't either.
As things stand now, I do not see that happening. But yeah, I do get you. It just needs to be dry and sunny.
Yeah. Dry, sunny, gray. 25 degrees. Thank you.
Yeah, not grey.
Yeah.
Like some blue skies.
Yeah.
We're going to All Points East, guys. We're going to see Haim and Tovlo and Confidence Man. Already seen them this week. This month, yeah. Confidence Man.
Yeah. I'm really excited. It's going to be good. But yeah, what else have we been up to? We've both been watching The Bear, but Ellie's ahead of me, obviously, because Ellie spends her whole life not giving me spoilers because she hates how slow I watch everything.
I inhaled that. I went to Sardinia, guys, but we'll get to that. I downloaded it and inhaled that on like a flight. It's so fucking good.
And then when I was asleep next to you after the Red Hot Chili Peppers, she was I stayed at Ellie's. We went to see Red Hot Chili Peppers. It was sick. We got really drunk afterwards as well. And then I was at Ellie's house asleep next to her. And I was like, you know, when you're like really hungover and you keep like falling back in and out of sleep. And Ellie was just there, like watching the bear next to me. And she just kept going, and then like giggling. And I was like, shut up.
Oh my god.
No, I wasn't really. I was just like lying there like, dear god, someone get me a Lucozade.
It is so good. I can't spoil it. I've finished it, so I can't spoil it for Kath. You're at season 2 episodes.
I'm watching season 2, yeah, but I'm on episode, I watched 2 episodes last. 2 episodes or 3? No, 2, I think. I can't remember. So yeah. It's good.
Po-po.
It's so good. I think the first series when they, like, all the chopping bits, like, every time they were chopping something and it got really stressful and they built up the tension, which was brilliant, but I was like, oh my god, I can't watch, because if someone chops a finger, I'm going to actually, like, be sick. So I was, like, watching behind my hands, like, grimacing.
Yeah. It's, I did wonder that. I was like, oh god, because obviously they're not professional chefs. And the guy who plays Carmi, he was in the American version of Shameless. And so like they all went to like culinary school to like learn, obviously, to, so for anyone who hasn't watched The Bear, it follows Carmi, who's like a like top chef, and he goes back to Chicago where he inherits like his brother's restaurant after he passes away. So it's about like the dysfunction that is his family, the dysfunction that is like hospitality, but also like them all sort of finding like themselves and their place, and what it, like who they are. Like, for example, oh my god, who's the character, the older woman? The older woman's name.
Oh my god, what's her name?
It's gone from my head. I'm googling it.
Why is she not coming up?
Tina. I was gonna say Gina, but it's Tina. I absolutely love her. Like, okay. I love her.
Spoiler, when I don't know if this actually materializes, but when Sydney asks her to be Sue and she hugs her, I was like, oh my god, that's so nice.
Yeah. It's the hope, it's Sydney gives her something. Like, she makes her feel like she's got some value that maybe she didn't think that she deserved it or didn't know that she was within her, but she opened her eyes to like her potential. And this sort of like belief that she gets in herself, all because of like, really the dynamic between Sid and Carmi is just like amazing. And Sid brings that out of her. She brings it out of her. She brings it out of, Marcus. I've got to be careful what I say. What's his face? The really loud one.
The loud one? They're all a bit loud.
Richie.
So
like everyone comes into their own, and it's fantastic in different ways. But I really loved Tina's arc. I just thought it was like fantastic. Like, I just, oh, yeah.
And
first
also
season.
The fact that her and Sydney just really didn't get on at all. Yeah. Which is, yeah. I could totally get, you know what? I was watching it, I was like, I can see this happening. Like, some like young chef with like loads of ideas comes to the house and change somewhere that you've worked for like 20 years and you're like, leave me alone.
Yeah.
Because you see that in work all the time, like not just kitchens, but like people like not wanting things to change because they want to do it their way and stuff. And it takes a while to like
tap into that, doesn't it? So
it does, yeah. And then you're like, oh my god, like, but you can learn, both of you learn from each other, right?
Exactly, yeah.
And so it was just fantastic. Also, there's an episode, it's about an hour long, when you'll get to it, and it's like the family, I think that's what it's called. Fucking fantastic. That episode needs to go up for like an Emmy. So bloody good.
I'm glad Tom made me watch it, because he makes me watch stuff that I don't want to watch sometimes. Because the first episode really stressed me out, and I was like, I don't think I can watch that, because the first series is really stressful. Like, every episode, my heart was like beating really fast, and I was like, this is not relaxing. So I'm glad you made me watch it, but I'm excited, yeah. And it's nice to first have it, because me and Tom do this, we go through cycles, we don't have anything to watch together, because he's watched stuff that I haven't watched and all the rest of it. And yeah. Then, like, when we find a series that we really like, it's good, so.
I wonder now, like, with actors' strike, with the strike that's going on, how, like, because everything's going to be just delayed, right? And fair, because they've got strike. But then it's just like, oh God, now we've got to wait until we get our next dose of this like fantastic story.
Yeah.
So yeah, go watch it, guys. It's fucking great.
Yeah, so good. But yeah, we're going to talk about two books that are not very good, in my opinion. Sorry, that's really like, horrible.
But really enjoyable. They're not fantastic, but they're enjoyable.
I would say I enjoyed reading the first book, but I wouldn't say I enjoyed reading the second book. It was easy, and I was like, oh, what's going to happen now? But I wouldn't say that it was enjoyable, but I think you liked it more than me, so.
I mean, I still think the first book is better. I was on a beach in Sardinia, like, it was the perfect setting for that exact kind of book.
Yeah, that's the thing. I wonder if, like, sat on the tube on the way to work was not the vibe.
And also, when we fed the first one, it was lockdown and everyone was going a bit stir crazy. It made sense in that context.
Yeah, that was like the first book I read after me and my ex split up and I moved back in with my parents. So I was actually going a bit crazy, I'm not going to lie. So.
Well, guys, to put you out your misery, we're going to talk about Lisa Jules, The Family Upstairs and The Family Remains.
Dun, dun, dun.
And even in the book club work chat, that people are still going on about it now. It's been weeks since we've read it.
Oh, God. So, yeah. So The Family Upstairs is the first book, and then The Family Remains is the second book. I mean, I guess that makes sense.
It is the sequel, so we get to find out what happens when the family remains. But it works on both. It works on two levels, right? Because, and we'll get to it. The family does still remain intact in some way, and then we do find some remains from the family. So, yeah.
So there you go.
There you go. But the family upstairs. I still am like, who was upstairs? And then one of the girls in our book club. Was like, well, you know, they're upstairs because,
and then gave an explanation
that I still don't understand.
I don't understand the book. I don't understand the plot. There's so many plot holes. Like, I'm so confused by the whole thing. Like, yeah.
Okay, so we're gonna try and piece it together from, because it's been a while since we've read the first one. Like I said, it was like lockdown, so it's been a good like 3 years.
It really has.
So there's a lot in it. There's a family and they are quite wealthy and they have a house and they are usurped by this man who is a cult leader. He brings in his family and his mistress and his mistress boyfriend, and he sort of like, there's this whole storyline with Birdie, who's the mistress, and David, who is the usurper, where he like, they groom the children in a way. I didn't quite understand that, I think, when I read it the first time anyway, other than like what was blatant with what they were trying to do with them or did with them. Lucy's character, but yeah. All of the children were in some shape or form like groomed or manipulated into doing things etc. It was like a house of hell for the children, and you had two sets of families living in there. One was like very much depressed, the others not so much. And the boyfriend of the mistress goes away, but he teaches one of the children who's called, what's his name?
Don't ask me what their names are, mate.
I want to say Peter, but it's not Peter, and it's not Edward.
The family remains characters. There you go. Oh, for God's sake.
I want to say it's Peter, but it's not. Not Finn, the other one.
The other one.
So he changes his name to Finn at the end of the book, doesn't he? But it's not. It's the weird kid.
Henry.
There we go. Peter Edward Henry. Yeah. So Henry has like the story's told in different from different narrative perspectives and in different like voices.
Mm-hmm.
So we get Henry is like. Henry really is like quite like main character, but he's like also really fucking unhinged, and he ends up killing everybody, in short. Because again, it's been
very everyone dies.
Most people die. All the adults die. with the exception of the boyfriend at this point, because he runs away. But the boyfriend deals in like potions and herbology, and so Henry starts to learn more about it, and he has this like deadly nightshade and uses that to poison the adults. He's also another thing to note about Henry is that he's obsessed with Finn is the other boy in the house. He's the eldest child in the house. He is the son of the usurper, but has nothing in common with his dad at all. Finn, the real Finn, is the father of Lucy's child, so she gets pregnant at 13 by Finn. I can't remember how that worked out or why or how that was a thing, but it was. Finn has a sister who is referenced in the book a lot, but it really isn't anything to do with anything.
Mm.
When they sort of part ways, Lucy goes to France. She meets a guy called Michael. He's abusive. They break up. She has a kid by him. She also has a kid by another man. She's like really down on her luck. And in the point of the at the beginning of the story, she comes back to the UK after killing Michael to get not to get passports. She gets passports. Michael's going to try and take advantage of her. She kills him before he gets a chance to. See how it's really complicated and whatever.
But you're doing a really good job. Like
I feel like I'm well jumping.
I'm just sort of listening. Like oh yeah, okay. I feel like this is like a bedtime story.
It really is because I'm like.
And then they all die.
And then, yeah. And then basically, when, as I told you, Lucy got pregnant when she was 13, and we pick up with that same child when she turns 25, because basically there's a big inheritance that she gets to claim when she's 25, and it's the house and some money. Mm. And that's where we pick up and then follow through, and we learn the story, the backstory.
And I liked her character. Upstairs. You don't really see her much in the second book.
No. So she learns like what happens. She falls in love with the journalist that she meets that starts
writing
about
this mystery.
Don't you think
the journalist is a bit like creepy though? Like I know he's meant to be nice, but I'm like, why are you so obsessed with me?
I feel like that's quite typical. Is it like a trope?
Yeah, probably. But I just like it's just creepy. God.
Sorry, I don't mean to jump. I was just thinking about the bear. Have you got to Claire yet?
He's just re-met her in the supermarket.
My God. So can we talk about this once you finished it? Because someone had said that she was very much a particular trope, and I just wanted it was sorry, it's a really loud noise coming down my road. It was in a British Vogue article that was posted on Instagram, and people lost their shit in the comments, and for several reasons. One, about them as a ship. And two, about the trope that they said that she was. So we'll pick this up. Part two of the bear coming to your ear soon. Now, back to the family upstairs. I just wanted to say what I thought of it.
The sequel.
the sequel. So yeah, so then the family, so okay, maybe thoughts on the family upstairs before we go to the family.
Okay, I think the family upstairs, I agree, it's enjoyable. I think it's mental, and I think the ending is so weird. I think it jumped around a lot. There were a lot of plot holes. It's not the best bit of writing I've ever read in my life. That's probably a very safe bet for anyone that reads it. I think Lisa Jewell writes books that do grip you, and I think at the time we were all pretty gripped by it. And I think at the time, I don't know if you remember, but we all kind of read it separately and we were like, oh yeah, kind of liked it. And then we came together and we just tore it to shreds.
Yeah.
And like, we just couldn't get over the fact that it was called The Family Upstairs for like no reason. Yeah, like, I think what I will say is they have good characterization.
Yeah. Particularly like, Henry.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah. What's you give your thoughts?
Oh, it was such a long time ago. The family upstairs. I feel like Henry is a good, solid character the whole way through. I do think, like you said, I think she's very good at writing suspense. Like very good at writing suspense, and she's very good at like writing character. Some characters more than others. And then I posed this to our book club. I was like, do you think that some characters were needed then to tell this whole story? Because
yeah,
some of them, they sort of pop up, but it's just like Finn had a sister, but was there any point in Finn having a sister really? Don't really see much of her at all. I mean, yeah, I guess she's more like a plot device, but...
Yeah, the foil characters, as Mellors would say. I don't know, like some... Yeah, I kind of agree. I think there's too many characters in both books, actually.
Especially in the second one, actually, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed, yeah, like I've said, we all went away and we're like, oh my God, this is really great. And then I think found too many plot holes to keep with that. But it was enjoyable in the moment that we read it. And when I went to Sardinia, I gave the book to my friend and was like, you got to read this. And we're both sat on the beach with the family, remains of the family upstairs. And she has the same thought. She's like, it's not the most amazing book, but I read it really quickly because it was like a fast, like gripping novel. And we have some Lisa Jewell fans in the book club who are like, don't judge her on this piece of work. But it's an international bestseller. Like, people love it.
People love it.
Yeah.
It's got, like, a new, like, copy with, like, gold on it. Edition, even. And then she probably got paid so much to do her sequel as well. Like, we're really clutching at straws for the sequel, I'm not going to lie. So, I mean, people love it. And I don't get it. No, I get why people like it. It's like a good story. It's like really far-fetched. It's easy to read.
It's really far-fetched.
Yeah. And I think people like things that are easy to read for obvious reasons, because you can read them and just get lost in them and not like concentrate that hard. Although I would argue that you have to concentrate pretty hard because there's a lot of plot twists and turns and characters and narratives and voices and...
Yeah.
A lot of everything.
I can't remember who we hear from. So we hear from Lucy, we hear from the baby. The baby's called Serenity Lamb, but her name changes to Libby as an adult. We hear from Henry. Is it just them? Maybe it's just three.
I don't know.
The three I can count, but there's so many more in the sequel, which we can move on to now.
Yeah, well, yes, in the sequel. Okay, go on, your initial thoughts on The Family Remains.
Really easy read. Was it necessary to have? No. I did enjoy, I enjoyed learning about Michael's previous relationship, although it really had nothing to do with anything until the very end. I think what it did, what the sequel did, was wrap everything up really nicely into a tight bow. And she very much said, I'm done with this now, leave me alone. Like, that's what the sequel was, in
my
opinion.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't like the way it was wrapped up, actually. It just... And then they all lived happily ever after. The end.
Yeah. 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 What were your thoughts? Well, yeah, I guess you gave...
I didn't like it. I was just like, what is this? Why am I reading this? And I feel like it repeated a lot of the first book again. So, here's my thoughts. I feel like it repeated a lot of the plot of the first book, but without explaining it enough that you could have read it without reading the first book.
Yeah.
So, like, what was the point? Because if you couldn't have, if you didn't understand the plot without having read the first book, why repeat so much of the plot in the second book? You know? So, yeah. One. Secondly, I didn't really like the way that they explored Rachel's character. I think it could have been done a lot better. Because I kind of liked her character.
Mm-hmm.
I also just didn't really get... I hated the way... This is a spoiler, guys. The way that Henry turns up, sees Finn, and then we're just left for ages. We don't know what's happened. And we all think he's like, tied him up, tortured him, killed him, something like that. And they just become friends.
Yeah, that was too easy. Like...
What?
I liked that Henry was a psychopath or a sociopath, I don't know. And I kind of just wanted him to be that way. And that would have been fine because, you know, we literally spend like 2.5 books with him being obsessed with him, like really obsessed, like dangerously obsessed, like the stuff that you hear on crime TV shows, obsessed, you know? Enough for his sister to, and again, another big sort of like, plot hole, get like a passport to be able to like go across the country with her two kids. Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh my god, it's so unrealistic. Like, as if
you wouldn't go after him knowing, like, putting yourself in such a vulnerable position. I also wondered that about like her buying a house and stuff, like both of them having lives after this if they're supposed to be in hiding. I know that it's probably possible, there's probably people that do it all the time, but there's so much you can't get around, I feel.
I think they bought the house, though, because they were buying in cash and stuff. So that probably made it easier.
Oh, yeah, true.
But then you need to, like, you own a deed and stuff like that, don't you? So I don't really know. But I guess she had ID. So
it was the fake one, didn't she? I don't know what the limits are in terms of travelling, as it were. Like, if you're trying to live...
Yeah.
So, guys, to give you sort of like the plot for the family remains, the remains of Birdie Dunlop, whatever her face is, so that's the mistress in the first movie. It could be a movie, to be fair. The remains of that, of the mistress, is found. So when she... How did Henry kill her?
Didn't he hit her over the head or something?
Oh, he hit her over the head. Yeah. And then, well, she has remains. She has body parts, which are hidden in the loft, and he takes them away at the end of the other book and he dumps them in the river. Not very well. He said he gets rid of them, but he doesn't get rid of them very well. And they're discovered by Mudlarker, who is... What did we learn that Mudlarker was? Someone who, like, scavengers, like, not scavengers, but... on the banks of the River Thames in London. That's a poor explanation of what a mudlarker is. And basically, we follow D.I. Samuel Orosu through this like investigation to find out who the remains belong to and then what happens. So he then finds out about the house. And through his character, it's for anyone who hasn't read the first one, you find out what the house was, who the family was, how things might have ended up or came to be. Mm-hmm. And then, speaking of Rachel's character, I think we spoke about them, but in different ways. So there's Michael and Rachel. Michael is Lucy's ex-husband and is Rachel's new husband. And we learn more about him through her and her character.
Yeah.
Which, maybe, I feel like Michael was probably a little bit more fleshed out in this you get to understand just how horrific and horrible he is. Whereas, yeah. like, Rachel, I don't know if she was given the same equal weight.
I don't feel like you really needed Rachel either. Like, no. I get why. But why did they need to flesh out Michael? Like, they didn't need that whole...
No, you didn't. So, basically, at the end, that storyline was to wrap up. Oh, did I say Lucy killed Michael? Lucy killed Michael. And so she's...
Which we knew, didn't we?
Which we knew. Yeah. And it was her... She spends the whole book worrying about when his remains will be found. So, oh, there's some more remains. And so Rachel's whole point in the story was to then, at some point, let Lucy know that they've stopped investigating his murder or his death or whatever it was, and that they put it down to, like, gun crime, whatever it was.
Neatly tied up in a bow.
Yeah.
Also, Rachel, someone pointed out, it was so funny, she's like, her whole, like, the turn in her story is like her dad comes around with Prosecco rather than champagne. I was like, no, come on now. Like, that's ridiculous.
He stops shopping in the shops that he likes to shop in. And like, yeah.
He wouldn't be bringing Prosecco at all if he had no money.
No, exactly. Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's so out of touch.
Yeah. So, like, basically, Rachel's dad is wealthy. She comes from a wealthy family. He sort of, like, funds her life. Not to say, she feels that way anyway in the books. I'm not saying anything she doesn't feel, but
like, yeah, he does fund her life. Fully.
He does fund her life.
Yeah,
and she wants to feel like she's independent of that. He's her business partner, but he, you know, he's her dad, and he's wealthy, and he's wanting to look after her. And then she meets Michael, and Michael, like, takes all the money in different ways, and he's abusive.
Dickhead.
Yeah. I didn't understand the whole bit, like, because if he was abusive with her, and we know he was abusive with Lucy, then when he moved on to this next woman, at some point that would have come out, because apparently they were still, like, dating, right? So I would have loved to have seen, like, maybe something between them. I don't, like, where they both come to the realization that they've both been through that, because a lot of Rachel's story arc is her trying to understand Lucy, trying to get to see who she is, so know that she wasn't the only one that went through Michael's abuse kind of thing. And she follows her to France, and where she sits and watches her play on the square, like the square in Nice.
Yeah, but I feel like you could have had the whole of Rachel's storyline without the whole her dad getting, like, done over by Michael blackmailing him kind of thing. Actually, I guess that's whole part of the abuse, isn't it? Which kind of like quite traumatic, really.
Yeah. I quite enjoyed that. It had nothing to do with anything else, but I enjoyed it.
But I feel like that's a book on its own.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there's just so much going on that, like, nothing is fully, like, that could have been a whole book.
Yeah.
You know what she should have done rather than a sequel? She should have done, like, should have picked out, for example, written a book about Rachel and Michael and linked it back to Lucy. And then, like, you know how almost like Taylor Jenkins Reid does, in a way, but a little bit more linked? So she, like, the characters show up in their other books. She should have done that.
Yeah. And it could, oh, that would have been amazing. Because then I think you could have really fleshed out maybe the patterns of abuse, because it was done in such a short space of time. It didn't really feel, I don't know that you felt quite the weight of it all.
That would have been a good book.
That would have been so good. Because actually I did find those bits interesting. It just had nothing to do with the main family as such.
Yeah, and no, I didn't think it was like, I didn't think that it was done justice to the situation. But hey.
And then also, I couldn't tell, like, I thought, like, what was the time jump? Because when Lucy has her child with Michael called Marco, he is, like, I want to say somewhere under 10.
And so then, apparently he's 11.
Oh, okay. So he's an 11-year-old hacker then.
It's really unrealistic.
Someone went to me, kids these days on laptops and stuff, like, yeah. And I was like, yeah. But, like, this man hacked, like, a 11. Whole... Yeah. My guy hacked, like, his mate hacked, like, everything.
Also, that's really unrealistic as well. Like, if Henry was actually had a brain cell or two, he wouldn't have done that. He wouldn't have left a device behind that was logged into everything.
No.
Well, maybe he would have done, because he wasn't actually going to murder anyone. If he was going to murder someone, then maybe he wouldn't have done.
I feel like Henry's... Henry's smarter than that. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Henry is smarter than that. So it's a discredit to him. But he's also reckless, and he's... You know how they say, like, some, like... They get cocky because they think they can get away with it, and then they slip up. So I'm going to be generous and put it to that. But okay. he is smarter than to leave everything open, and also to call Lucy and be like, I'm in Chicago. Nah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, so we follow Henry to Chicago. We follow Henry to Chicago, who's trying to trace down Finn. So at the end of the first book, we learn that Finn is in, like, Botswana, and he's opened a safari or something. So they go to see him in Botswana. Finn gets a heads up that they're coming from his sister. It's the only reference we get to his sister at all in the second book. And so he, like, flees to Chicago because he's got business partners there and et cetera. And he lived in America for a while. And so Henry, and then eventually Lucy and Stella, who's her youngest child, and Marco all go to follow Henry to stop Henry from hurting Finn, but also to bring Finn back home. But Finn doesn't want anything to do with these people.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to be a dad.
Yeah. But that's just so weak as well. Like, he's been running because he didn't want to be a dad. Like, as in, I know that people do that, but I mean, it felt like there needed to be a bigger thing that was keeping him away. Like, it felt like really dramatic and built up for ages, and then it was like, oh no, I'm scared to meet my daughter, who's not even like, she's not like a baby. Just, he doesn't have to look after her.
I wonder if, and maybe because I have no recollection of it when we read the first one, I don't feel like we get enough of Finn's relationship with his dad in the first book, because there's a conversation between him and Henry when we finally get back to him and Henry, where he felt like he was like, I should have protected everyone and I didn't. Henry, that was you. And I was his son, and I didn't like do anything about it. Like, and then I guess he learned how to be a father by his own father. Do you know what I mean? So all he understands about fatherhood is what not to do, so he doesn't know how to do it. But we didn't get enough of that dynamic between them in the first book to set that up as something that happens now with him and Libby. Do you know what I mean?
But and also then, like, yeah, it just feels a bit like, oh, why did he stay away? Let's make up a reason. Do you know what I mean?
But then that could have been written in the first book. And then also, and I can't remember how Lucy and Finn become a thing. Or not a thing, but how that whole sex thing happened with Finn and Lucy.
Well, also, she's 13.
She's 13, right? So then... the black book split. she was 13. There were teenagers in the house, and he was 16 of consent, and she wasn't. But we don't get enough of... I don't believe or remember their dynamic as to how and why that happened, maybe, other than maybe, you know, the circumstances and situation. Or whether that was the dad. I just don't remember. So I think an exploration of Finn and Lucy, and an exploration of Finn and his relationship with his father needed. I think that was needed.
Yeah, sorry, that was my chair. I agree. I agree.
Yeah.
But hey, I mean, it's not the best book ever.
But it's oh my God, guys, if you want a really easy, if you're looking to knock some, like, if you've got a reading target and you need to get some books off, like, against your target, these are easily something you should read. or if you're in a rut. For sure.
Agreed. And I also actually kind of want to see it go to the screen.
Yeah, same.
And I think it might. It's been really popular, and I feel like it would be a wild... What do you reckon, a film or a series? I reckon a series.
A series, yeah. A series. It'd be too much to explain in a film, I reckon.
Yeah.
In my head, Henry, did you ever watch The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe?
Mm-hmm.
When they, The Chronicles of Narnia, when they remade it.
No, not when they remade it.
Oh, I'm going to post it. Henry is the one that plays Edward. Is it Edward? Oh, is that where I'm getting Edward from?
Maybe.
The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe.
What's the name?
Yeah, Edmund. Edward Pevensey. I can't say it. Whoever plays Edmund, right, I see Henry as that. And so I just need them to roll back the clock and hire him to play a young Henry or even like an older Henry.
Yeah.
Same sort of character.
Yeah.
Oh my God, he's 31 now.
I mean, well, we talk about a lot about like book to screen in our chat with Centre Rich on Hotel 21. So if you guys are interested in our thoughts on books and going to the screen, check out that episode.
Yes.
It was a good one, actually. She was lovely. We had a really nice time chatting to her.
I really like that book. I really hope they turn it into something, because I think it'd be quite a fun watch. And again, it's a really easy read. And it was one of the nice, not that any of our recordings haven't been nice, but that was like a memorable one, you know?
Yeah, well, sometimes the internet doesn't work. Okay, today.
You won't know this because, you know, the magic of editing, but we've had some problems today.
We have so many less problems now than we used to.
Yes, true.
Even like...
That's very true.
We had loads of problems to begin with, and then like our Wi-Fi... Ellie's got better Wi-Fi now. I haven't. I've got worse Wi-Fi.
So much better than it was. Oh my God. I don't know how I've got through life with Wi-Fi as bad as I had.
I don't know how you did it. Honestly, her Wi-Fi was so bad, guys. Like, so bad. And honestly, I feel like I felt the pain just as much as Ellie did, because we worked together during that time. So every bloody Teams call, I'd be like, oh, she's gone again. Every recording, oh, she's gone. Ellie, I can't see you, can't hear you. Oh, you're fuzzy. Oh, you're frozen. The struggle.
Oh, the struggle is real. The struggle is real.
But it's better now, at least.
Yeah, it's like... It's like a new, so I'm living in a whole new life with better Wi-Fi.
The thing is with my Wi-Fi is that it's really slow to upload. Everything else is fine, but the upload speed is terrible. It takes like, I have to hotspot my phone basically. When I got my new phone contract, I had to make sure I had enough data to hotspot my phone to upload the podcast. And it just cuts out like randomly for like 5 minutes, then it comes back. It's like, oh, sorry guys, I was just having a nap, I'm back.
Need to power down.
Yeah. But anyway, we would encourage going to read the book. Books, well, I would say read the first one. I'm not sure the second one's worth it unless you were gripped by the first one and you want to know what happens in the second one. But yeah,
go read, guys. Oh, what are you reading now?
I'm reading Salt Lick, which is a dystopian novel that I've had on my shelf for ages that I really wanted to read. It was longlisted for one of the women's prizes, can't remember which year, 2022, maybe? And it's basically set in like a post-climate collapse world. There's a pandemic in it. Like, basically everybody's moving from the villages to the city because there's no work in the villages, and they won't let anyone like own cars and stuff, so no one can get around. So everybody has to live in the city. So in the city, it's like really polluted, and like people are dying from like lung disease and stuff. So that's like the premise. I'm not very far into it, but it's really interesting. It's kind of depressing, to be honest. But I read, we kindly got gifted a book called Constance by Joseph Sigmund.
Yes, Joseph Sigmund.
Debut novel, I think, of hers, by Indigo Press. And I read that, and that's also a dystopian, like, post-climate collapse, like, vibe. I don't know if that's the right word. But, like, post, like, basically in a world where, you know, climate change has made, like, things unlivable and stuff like that, and you get, like, one ticket out of the UK, basically. Well, and then there's, like, different things going on in different countries. But basically, in Constance, it's, like, now, but now is like a few years ago, to be fair, it's like 2000s, and then the future, which is like 2060 or something. It's really interesting, and it's weird that I'm reading both books quite closely together. That was not intentional. So yeah, I really like a dystopian novel. I think the Constance one freaked me out a little bit.
Is that because you feel like we're living in a dystopian novel right now?
Well, yeah, exactly. Like, that's the thing, isn't it, with dystopian stuff? It's, like, not that far away from, like, a reality, so it is a bit scary. But I really like it. Like, some of my favourite novels are dystopian novels, so, like, 1984. That's the right date, isn't it? I always get the date wrong
for
that book. I really like that book.
Bloody hell.
No, I literally always get it. I think I have a problem with, like, numbers and ordering them, though, sometimes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's not, like... It's like my left and right thing. I can't do it like properly. I have to really think about it. So,
this book I started reading it and then I picked up something else because I didn't want to take, well, one, because I knew I had to read The Family Remains for book club, so I had to put this down to them, read that, and then I picked up Yellowface. So I will finish Yellowface and then go back to Constance, and then we'll
Yellowface next episode. Maybe?
Yeah, hopefully, guys, if I get my shit together, it will be, because I think over summer we've put out like an episode a month, but back in September we'll be back to like two episodes a month. So I'm most likely.
So excited to talk about Yellowface. Oh my God.
It's a bit like, I'm not that far in, I'm like four chapters in, but it's like, you know, when you have a thought and then she says your thought or it like... Yeah, oh, I've had this thought, and then she says your thought out loud, kind of thing.
Mate, Yellowface is good. It's worth the hype. It's not like it's not a 5-star read at IMO, but it is worth the IMO.
Oh, IMO, IMO.
I need to go sleep. But yeah, no, it's really good.
Also, so,
yeah, next episode, guys, stay tuned.
Also, guys, we might have to like redo our intro / our not our jingle, but you know, it's like your episode summary thing, teaser, because Twitter is no more. It's now X, which I can't talk about. Can, because gives a fuck about Elon Musk, but Twitter's no more, so
we follow us on Threads, guys.
Follow us on Threads. Oh, that was oh my God, that was wild.
That day, yeah.
That was wild that day when Threads became a thing. Because we're social media, man. Like, social media is part of our job.
Yeah.
So now I have 7 accounts to look after. It's very long. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm actually quite glad it's not... I mean, I still kind of do it, but I'd have to do it day to day, and I'm like, yes. Thank God. Oh... No, it's good. It's good fun. It's really fun. Working in social is so fun. And then, like, just some of it, you're just like, oh my God, I need to write another tweet. What am I going to say? Or another thread or another X or whatever the hell it's called.
Oh, I'm still calling it a tweet. Like, imagine rebranding something that's so iconically known that it has its own verb. Do you know what I mean? Like,
it's a real shame.
It's a real shame. Like, That it didn't need a rebrand, it just needs a new owner. Like, and I blame that board. I blame them suing him into buying the company. Like, you've ruined something that was good. And people are still on Twitter.
Yeah, but have you noticed it's like a certain
type of peer, yeah.
But anyway, on that note,
will leave you with the fall of Twitter and a new bio for us.
Yeah, so if you've got any suggestions, guys, because I feel like we don't talk about half the stuff we said we did anyway, so...
Exactly. Just talk about Netflix and books.
And some things.
Yeah. Anyway.
Guys.
Okay.
Well, until next time.
Until next time. Bye.
Bye.
I'm going to watch it. And that's the app. If you like the episode, please leave us a lovely review, subscribe and share with your friends, and we'll love you forever. Follow us on socials at We Are Bookish Pod. Thanks for listening.